Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
This is a true crime podcast, as the title suggests. So please consider this your warning, that it's not suitable for children. And it probably will contain content that may be triggering to some people. Also, it's an Australian true crime podcast. So Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners should be aware it may contain the voices of deceased people.
The producers of this podcast recognise the traditional owners of the land on which it's recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal elders past, present and those emerging.
It's estimated that around one-third of sexual assaults committed against Australian children are carried out by other children. According to the Australian Centre for Child Protection, Australian children are increasingly displaying harmful sexual behaviours, and there's a tendency within our society to minimise it and characterise it as normal sexual development. Our guest on Australian True Crime today, Emma, was the victim of other children's harmful sexual behaviours when she was 13 years old. We know that adult sexual predators tend to seek out vulnerable children to take advantage of. Disturbingly, that approach seems to be instinctive. As you'll hear, Emma was definitely vulnerable when her attackers singled her out from the crowd.
So it was my mum, my dad and myself. I guess my memories of that time weren't the best sort of intro memories into life. My dad was quite a scary individual. He's also a very charismatic individual. So he had a way with, I guess, getting people on his side, but he also had a really quick temper. And I think some of the first memories I actually have were me hovering over my mum, trying to get in the way of him hitting her. But I always looked up to him, which was, I mean, you do. No matter who the father figure is in your life, right? You don't know any different.
It's really hard to make a child stop loving a parent.
It is, 100%. I guess how they started off was even more bizarre, because my mum was engaged to one of his friends and they were involved in a motorcycle accident together. So my dad was on the back of this motorcycle and my mum's fiance was on the front. They've collided with a car. It was actually the car driver's fault, and my mum's fiance died instantly. And my dad went on to have lots of injuries. My mum was mourning. She didn't know anyone where we lived. He offered comfort. A relationship bloomed from that. So she didn't really know anyone. And then they started this relationship. And yeah, he just wasn't the best guy to start a relationship with. I guess he had that temper from the injuries that he had sustained in the motorcycle accident. He actually also had a codeine dependency.
Gosh, so much going on, isn't there? I think that's what's called a trauma bond.
Yeah, it's definitely a trauma bond. So, my mum has said to me many times that it's not someone she would have picked, and it's, she was seriously mourning the person that she was in love with and looking for some comfort.
And so was he.
Yeah, I think so. And, out I came, and he ended up actually having an affair when I was 3. And I know that he would put sleeping pills in my mum's coffee. In the evening, she'd have coffee or a drink and he'd drug her so she'd fall asleep.
So he could go out?
Yeah, I think she knew he was going out, but I think it would just make it a little bit easier for him to sort of get away with what he was up to. They ended up splitting up, and I don't think I saw him for a good year, and he ultimately married the woman he had an affair with. Look, I have good memories of my childhood. I was with him every second weekend up until about 10 years old. My memories at home with my mum's new husband, who is my stepdad, and he's more of my father figure. So actually, he's my dad.
So life got easier once they broke up?
Yeah, on that side of things. For my mum, it was a boring life. That was, I think, what mum wanted, and that's what we had. So, but then I'd go to my dad's every second weekend, and things were kind of different. The woman that he married had a child who was a year older than me. So I ended up having a stepbrother for 6 or 7 years, however long they were together. So that was also nice. But ultimately, they ended up breaking up as well, and I didn't get to continue that relationship with him. I was in grade 3 and they were splitting up. And I remember my stepmom and my stepbrother moved away, and my dad ended up following them. So I didn't see him for a while. And I was heartbroken. I definitely remember that. I felt abandoned and I felt a huge loss, especially I think losing my stepbrother was the biggest loss there. And then a year later, my dad got himself locked up.
Oh, wow. What for?
Grievous bodily harm, actually. He was a bouncer and he had an altercation that I guess was slightly off the premises of the club he was working in. And this man had a pretty serious injury from it. I think it was neurological. And my dad ended up going to a correctional centre up there for a while. He got out and he was on parole, and he actually came down to see his parents and myself. And it was very sneaky. He was obviously breaching his parole conditions, and they chucked him back in for a while. So, yeah, it was a pretty how-you-going time.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? He was not great at decision-making, your dad. I don't know how he's going now. He's still alive?
He is. So I don't actually speak with my dad. I haven't spoken with my dad for, I'd say, 2 to 3 years now. So my little boy is 3 at the end of this month, actually. And just after he was born, I decided to cut contact with him. A lot of things happened throughout my high school years with him as well. Like, I went on to see him a few times when he was in Queensland after he got out of jail. But he was always the same violent person. He still had the codeine dependency. I should say as well, when I was younger, there were always incidents when I was at his house. I remember having to hide for one day in his bedroom with him while my stepmom and stepbrother were out. And there was a man knocking on every window and door of that house saying, "I know you're in there, come out, like, we need to talk, I know you're in there." And he insisted, like, be quiet, don't say anything. There was always something like that, like our car would get stolen out of the garage at night, but you'd know that it would be some form of a debt that he was owing someone.
Yeah, like he's not calling the police over it.
No, he's not calling the police over it. I remember another time in high school I went there, and he ended up having a new partner when I was in high school, and they ended up being together for a long time, up until recently, actually, and she left him. So I remember there was another day we were there. I was at his house up in Queensland, and he went out all day, and he usually dressed quite nicely. I mean, nicely for him was a tap-out shirt and some shorts. But like
tidy,
and it would smell nice, and that was his thing. But he went out one day, and he was wearing like footy shorts and a dirty old shirt. And that evening he'd come home and he said, if anyone asks, I was with you guys all day. I think it was like within 15 minutes, we had a car rock up out the front and two people get out. Just got some questions for you. Where have you been today? I didn't get asked anything, thankfully, but they were undercover cops and they were asking a few questions. His partner was a mess. After the cops left, they ended up taking him down to the police station. I think we went and picked him up a few hours later and he talked himself out of it. But what he'd ultimately done was he'd gone and beaten someone up and stolen their motorbike.
Oh, God. How was it affecting your mental health? Like, were you, because it's making me nervous just listening to it. So were you becoming an anxious kid?
I was already an anxious kid because of the separation anxiety. So I would deal with that on an extreme level. So I'd leave my mum's to go to my dad's and I wouldn't want to leave my mum. And then I'd leave my dad's to go to my mum's and I wouldn't want to leave my dad. So that was already sort of going on in the background. But yeah, I knew not to say or do certain things around my dad. I mean, there was an instance when I was in high school when he ultimately did get out of jail and I was crying to him about something and he said, stop crying or I'll slap the tears away. So that was just what he was like. I think he smacked me once when I was a little girl and he never did it again. So he never hurt me, but it was everything else that hurt me. It was he didn't pay child support. He'd never sent me a birthday gift. He'd forget my birthdays. He'd forget Christmas.
So he did hurt you.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Just not physically.
And also saying that is him just saying, I can't cope with your emotions.
It was too much, 100% too much.
Oh, that makes me want to cry. That's so hard for a child, isn't it, to be crying to a parent and have them say, I cannot, all I can think of to do is to say, I will hit you if you do not stop this because I can't cope with it.
Yeah, and the worst thing was about that conversation was obviously what we're going to chat about today, that event that happened.
It was about that? Because it sounds like it, from everything you've said that he's just desperately immature. That's an understatement, but just never grown up, never accepted adult responsibility.
No, never grown up. He was so young and I don't even think it would have mattered with his age. I don't think he was ready to be a dad, probably until recently. And even then, I don't think I would want him to be a parent. There was also another factor of this is that he had a massive porn addiction and I was exposed to that throughout my childhood as well.
Are you saying though that he wasn't trying to sexualize you?
No.
But it was just around because he was I've sort of experienced people like this where it's like they're just, again, too selfish to put it away, basically.
100%. That's all it was. He did not care. He didn't care what impression it had on my mind. I mean, I was 4 or 5 and he would leave me in the car at the petrol station, which everyone did back then. He'd come back out with a dirty magazine, pop it behind the seat of his ute, which was a 2-seater ute, chuck it behind me. Of course, I'm going to go looking at it. He's hidden it from me. I want to have a look at what he's hidden from me. And these weren't, it wasn't Playboy. It was very aggressive, the things that were in these magazines. And so I think I was very young with a curiosity that I shouldn't have had that came from that. So that also was an unhealthy thing that came from that relationship because there was no way that my stepdad, for instance, was leaving that around. He probably wouldn't even buy one.
Yeah, interesting. I was going to say it's interesting. Well, yeah, interesting again is an understatement, but women who don't have great relationships with their dads or whose dads are absent oftentimes can have lots of issues around sexuality and around just relationships with men, obviously. But you had this dual thing going on where you also then had quite, it sounds like, an ideal stepdad. So you have these two really extreme examples of manhood, manliness going on in your life.
Yes, definitely. So my stepdad, quite high up in the public service, very intelligent.
Interesting. You used the word boring before to describe your life at home. So it's like on one hand you've got Mr. Boring, which must have chafed a little bit sometimes because it would with a kid, a teenager. And then on the other hand you've got Mr. Excitement, who's also definitely chafing and upsetting.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. But I also wouldn't let my stepdad in. I mean, I wanted my crazy dad as my dad. I wanted, for instance, if anything happened to me, he'd be my protector. That's how I looked at him. He's this big bad man, like he's going to look after me. Not that I could get away with anything, but I thought that, that's what you want when you're young, right? You want your big, strong dad to look after you. And I had my stepdad who was, calm, like quite put together, professional, very logical. And he, I wanted none of that. And I didn't want any of that until I was probably 18. And for instance, now my son's middle name, it's his name. So he has had a huge impact on my life. And that was, I guess, a thank you in a way to him.
So you did have a very traumatic thing happen to you when you were just 13 years old. So you had such an incredibly volatile life up until that stage already. We've already talked about your life up to the age of 10. And then there was a pivotal traumatic moment when you were 13. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So my grade 7 year was actually at an all-girls Catholic school. I didn't enjoy that at all. So my parents, they let me move. They said, yeah, you can go to a co-ed school. That's fine. We'll drop the cost anyway. Let's take you. So there was a feeder school from my primary school, easy bus to get to it. That's where they sent me. So that was about a 30-minute drive away from where we lived, about an hour bus trip all up with the stops included and the distance. I had a few friends from primary school that went there, but I think ultimately starting there, I had quite a lot of difficulty fitting in. If you think about these girl cliques, they'd already been formed the year prior.
Yeah.
And it was really clear to me from day one that I wasn't really going to fit in with those girls. I mean, I think that they just saw me as the new girl. They had what they needed, and girls at that age are nasty.
They don't make it easy, do they?
They don't make it easy.
They're like, work for it, bitch.
Oh, yes. And that's the thing. And I did. I've worked for it. Worked for acceptance for the next few months. And I started to form some friendships outside of the people I knew from primary school. I was sort of just, I wouldn't say a floater. I definitely had my close friends, but I would talk to everyone. With that being said as well, I wouldn't say that I was a stand-up girl. I definitely, I always had a flair for drama. I mean, in my home life, and then I guess I would pass on into my friendships as well. Like, but it was very baseline stuff. You know, you'd have a little bit of a gossip about what so-and-so was wearing, but it would never go past that. But I was what you would say was a very average girl. I definitely liked boys though. That was always a thing. I always wanted to have a boyfriend, that label. I wanted to have a boyfriend. I wanted to hold hands, have a cuddle, maybe have a kiss, and that was it. So I'd started to develop a few little crushes, as you do when you'll have a boyfriend for 2 days. A couple of months into school, and from where I was living in that suburb, there was a particular grade 10 boy who would catch my bus. He would sit on the back seat. So I was in grade 8 and I would sit midway up the bus. You had your chain of who sat where on the bus.
Yeah.
So I eventually got there, don't worry. But I was midway, and we'd always sit back talking to people behind us, and I'd always lock eyes with this grade 10 boy. I wouldn't say I found him attractive, but I remember thinking he had really nice eyes. I always remembered that. So we'd always look at each other. And then I remember, as you do back then, you don't need to know the person, you just ask them to be your girlfriend. And he did exactly that. And I said yes, probably shouldn't have, but I said yes because I, you know, cool grade 10 boy.
He's in grade 10.
Yeah, yeah. That's super cool. So I was all about it. But the attraction still was never there for me. I just thought, okay, I'm just going to be a girlfriend. So we went on to have a little relationship, but it became pretty overwhelming pretty quickly. He would call my house phone after school and tell my mum as she answered that he was going to marry me.
Wow.
Really full on.
He's very confident, isn't he?
Oh, he was very confident, very confident. And my mum would just laugh it off and be like, here's the phone. He would bring me flowers to school. He would shower me with affection. And I think I was a little bit, I mean, the word didn't exist around there, but if I could say the ick.
Yeah. Also, kids at that age just want to fit in and be like everyone else. And that is not like everyone else behavior. That's very over the top.
No, it was full on for his age.
Yeah.
And it's not what I wanted. Like, I mean, it did get too much. And one day we were jumping off the bus together. I got off at his stop, which is a short walk from home. And I think he'd either tried to hug or kiss me. And I just said, I don't really want to be your girlfriend anymore. And I remember walking home after that. And I think he was crying back at the bus stop. He was so upset. So I've walked home and that was that. He'd started calling me again, but he'd be with his friends. So there was one friend who went to a different school and there was one friend who went to our school. They were both in the same grade, year 10. And this one particular friend who went to our school was, all the girls thought he was so cute. And they started playing me a little bit on these phone calls saying, so I'll give his friend a name, for instance, we'll just call him Jake. Oh, Jake likes you. You should come and hang out with us. Jake really likes you. He wants to see you. You don't know at that age that that's not an acceptable thing to like your ex-boyfriend's friend.
Yeah.
And I think they knew that girls liked Jake. So I think my ex-boyfriend was using that to sort of get me to hang around. So there was one day where I went to Jake's house. I actually went upstairs with him and we kissed. And the boys, so my ex-boyfriend and another of his friends who went to the other school, were outside on the street, and I remember them calling out to the bedroom window saying, stop rooting her and come down. And that sort of ramp up in the degrading comments, so that's where it sort of started to get a little bit worse. I mean, he was obviously hurt that I was up there kissing his friend. I don't think he was expecting that to happen.
Even though he had lured you into the whole scenario by saying Jake likes you and all that. So this is, yeah, I mean, this is classic teenage behaviour on everyone's part, really. And we're also feeling for this girl, you know, for you, because I think every woman listening is going, oh, be careful, babe.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it wasn't, like, there are quite a few girls my age doing that, you know.
Oh, of course. This is what I mean. It's only now that we look back, because at the time I'm thinking, awesome. Oh, my God. I'm at Jake's house. He's the hottest guy. Everyone wants to be here, but it's only my 50-year-old self that is looking back and going, oh, God.
Even my 30-year-old self, it makes me feel like run.
Totally. But at the time, I would have been there in a heartbeat.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. And that's the thing. It was exactly what I wanted. And I thought a relationship would form out of that.
Of course you did. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been there. Girls don't go and do that stuff. Unless they think, oh, my God, I think I'm going to be Jake's girlfriend.
Yes.
Especially you're the new girl at school. This is going to just set everything up.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. I thought that was my ticket into the hot lane. But, and, you know, and I would say that I had quite a big crush on him at that stage. I mean, I probably always did from the moment I saw him. He was that kind of guy. But he didn't like me like that. And the fact that I was willing to kiss him was just a bonus. He didn't care about his friend riding outside. That was another story. But his friend was, so my ex-boyfriend was clearly upset on the street, riding around, making degrading comments at the window. I eventually left and went home. I think back at school, that kind of got around. The rumors weren't too crazy though, enough to be pushed past. And the boys and I, we kept in contact. So it was actually Easter weekend in 2007. I remember it was a really beautiful sunny day. And one of them, I can't recall who, got in touch with me. So out of the three boys, got in touch with me to say, Jake's parents are away, got the house to ourselves, we're drinking, you should come. I'd never been drunk. I think I'd had a sip of a cruiser maybe, probably all I'd done. I thought, hell yeah, why not? So there weren't any other girls there. It was going to just be me. But then again, I thought I had this sort of thing looming with Jake. I don't know what my parents are doing. They're probably gardening, something like that.
Something boring.
Yeah, being boring. But I've grabbed a bottle of red wine and I've chucked it in a backpack, gone out to them. Guys, I'm going to my best friend's house. She lived 10 minutes away. They had no reason to doubt that. They had no reason to question it. It was a suburb that was separate to other suburbs, and it was pretty safe to walk around. Your friends lived down the road, safe neighborhood. So in reality, I was actually going about a 20-minute walk away. So I've headed off. I got to the house and the boys were in the kitchen drinking some form of dark liquor. It was like a Jim Beam or a Jack Daniels. I think they offered it to me, but I was like, oh, no, thank you. We went upstairs to Jake's room. And I remember we're all sitting around. They pulled out a wine cask and they started pouring it into my mouth. I was accepting of this. I'd never tried it. So I was like, oh, okay. I remember I had my head back and I was allowing it or trying it. I think we got carried away and we were all passing it around. And then I remember them also opening the bottle of wine and they were giving it to me saying, drink this. So it was just so much alcohol. We were just drinking and drinking and drinking. And the next thing I knew was we were walking to the main bedroom of the house, which was Jake's parents' room. It goes blurry there for me. I was really quite drunk, but I guess the details that follow that are highlighted in my mind are this. I was on the bed with my ex-boyfriend. The other two boys were either in the room or nearby, but they weren't with me. I remember my ex-boyfriend taking my bra off. I remember him doing things to me that were incredibly painful. And me saying, stop, stop, stop. I don't know how many times I said that word, but it felt like I said it so many times. And then I remember him offering to do something else and me saying yes in order for that pain to stop. I then remember waking up, I don't know how long after it was, and I was completely naked on the floor of the bedroom. I had my phone at the time passed to me or thrown next to me, one of the two, and they said, your mum keeps calling you, you need to go home. So at this point, I've grabbed a pillow to cover myself, realizing I was completely naked. I remember they were all standing around, the three of them, and they watched me crawl on all fours nude to the ensuite while I was sick in the toilet. They said that they'd called a friend of mine who wasn't a close friend. She was actually one of the popular girls at school. But we were starting to form a bit of a friendship. She just happened to live close by and they were friends with her older brother. So it was an easy person for them to get to come and get me. They said, we've called so-and-so, she's coming to come and get you. You need to go out the front. So I've walked downstairs. I couldn't find an undershirt that I had on. I've just put my overshirt on. I've gone downstairs. I've walked out the front door and I remember just vomiting everywhere. I then remember my friend from school rocking up and it was a really awkward experience. I was sort of coming to at this point and I think she was a little bit taken back from maybe what she was seeing. But she ended up saying to me, I actually can't walk you home because I live 20 minutes down the road. She lived right behind and she said, I can't walk you home. I've got to go to a footy match with my family. That's what happened. She ended up walking off. I think she checked if I was okay, but I mean, it wasn't her responsibility. So that's where she left it. And I've walked onto the street. The three boys at this stage were on their bikes. They used to love going to the skate park. That was the big thing in my suburb. So there they had their BMX bikes. They were riding around. And then as I've been walking down the street, my ex-boyfriend threw an empty condom wrapper at me. And then they've ridden off in the opposite direction down to the skate park. And I made the 20-minute walk home, partially drunk by myself. So I've gotten home. I don't really remember that. I remember walking home though. And I remember, I just remember how raw it felt. Like when you're sobering up for the first time after drinking. And I remember feeling like every car was looking at me as they're driving past because I had to go down a main road home. I've walked home. I remember my mum putting me in my very dark bedroom. I remember her checking my underwear because I think she wasn't mentioning anything at this time. She wasn't asking much, but she knew that something wasn't right. And she said, she's like, what have you been doing? And I said, oh, we went to get fish and chips. And I think the gravy was off.
Oh, baby.
Oh my God. I don't even know what I was thinking. So this was, the Easter long weekend, then we had the next day, I think as a recovery day, I hadn't processed what had happened yet. I think all I remember thinking was, I've got to make sure that those boys are okay. I've got to make sure that they don't think I'm disgusting. I've got to make sure I haven't done something wrong.
just taking responsibility for it, just taking all the responsibility for fixing it, for making it right. And also I'm thinking about your mum. I'm thinking, if my daughter came home like that, I'm realizing my first inclination would be to put you in the bath, which is obviously the worst possible thing. I'm just, you know, imagining how I would have just made the worst mistake under the circumstances. I would have thought, oh, babe, what's happened? What's happened? Quick, come here. Let me put you in the bath.
I think I would do something similar, like a shower or something. But well, I think, first of all, I think it was very obvious to her that I was drunk. I think I was ready to sleep, and I think she just put me to bed. And I just remember that room being really dark. I remember her checking on me quite a bit. I don't remember the conversations we had the next day. I'm sure I was in some form of trouble, but I think my mum ultimately knew that something had happened, and I think her mission was to get that out of me.
Of course. She checked your underwear. She definitely had her suspicions.
Yeah, exactly right. So it's come up to the Tuesday, which is the day after the, so you put the long weekend public holiday on the Monday, and I was waiting at my bus stop. My ex-boyfriend had a bus stop about 6 or 7 bus stops before me, and he was always on the bus first. And I remember thinking, okay, so I'm going to get on the bus and I'm going to see him. And the way in which we look at each other will confirm to me how things are. And I remember getting on that bus and I knew instantly that things were not going to be the same. I just knew it. I remember he was with a few, maybe 1 or 2 of the girls from his year. And I just remember the smirk that one of them had on her face.
No.
Yeah, it was awful. And I remember him just looking at me so blankly and watching me as I sat in my seat. And I kid you not, we never spoke again. We never spoke again.
Ever.
Ever. I never spoke with him again. That was it. That was done. And I just remember the state of hypervigilance that I was in that rest of that trip. I remember the bus got more crowded. More people would go up and sit sort of towards the back. And I just felt like everyone was talking about it. I don't know if that was on my mind, if that was just me overthinking things at the time, but I mean, you'd hear a laugh. Are they talking about it? Are they?
Yeah.
And it was the most awful feeling. And then I remember it came around to Jake's bus stop, which was one of the last ones. He got on the bus. He did acknowledge me. But it was a really awkward, maybe like a head nod, walked to the back of the bus with his friends. And that's where the real beginning of my high school experience started from there, because it was that first year 7 for me at a different school, and then it was build up to acceptance or to be thrown in the bin, and then it was start fresh. And it wasn't the same after that. I mean, it was slut shaming. It was intimidation. I lived every day going to school. I had to make that bus trip with them every day for the rest of that year. And yeah, it was awful.
If you'd like to talk to someone about abuse that's taken place in your life, no matter how long ago it happened, your GP is always a good place to start. If that's not going to work for you, you can contact 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737-732 or via their website, 1800respect.org.au. Or you can call Lifeline's 24-hour phone counselling service on 13 11 14.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches and fine jewellery. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Can I ask a question? Did you disclose at any point to an adult what had happened? Did anyone, if kids are starting to find out, did anyone disclose to an adult what had happened or what they were hearing? I would hope my children, if they heard this story, would disclose to me, and then I would go to an appropriate authority and say, I've heard this story.
Yeah. No, I hadn't at that point. And then I think my mum could see that I was slowly spiraling. I think I was working so hard at school to reclaim my reputation. I knew that what had happened on that day wasn't okay. And I knew the words for it. I knew I called it then. And I'm really proud of myself for calling it back then. In hindsight, I called it a sexual assault. And that was to my best friend, to the girl that had come down to see me from the street behind when she asked about it and stuff. But they controlled the narrative around it. They were more influential at school than me. They had more friends than me. They had more people wanting to please them than I had. So, I mean, they had girls that, you know, wanted to impress them. And
wanted to be with them. So what were they saying? They were saying what, that you wanted it?
They were saying that I was making up, that I was raped.
Were they saying that there was any sex at all?
They were just saying that I willingly got with my ex-boyfriend, and if anyone heard any differently, that was completely false. It was all completely okay.
Yeah, drama. She's making up drama.
Yeah, exactly. And then it just got to the point where I was fighting so hard every day against these rumors. I think my mum just eventually was just like, you have to tell me what has happened. And I did. I clearly remember I was standing in her ensuite and I told her what had happened. And she was like, can we please go to the police about this? This isn't okay. And I remember finally giving in at that point and go, yeah, like, let's go to the police, because there was nothing more that I could do myself at school. People were looking at me differently. I felt disgusting. I felt like I just didn't feel like I could do any more.
No, and you didn't have to do it by yourself, you know. You shouldn't have had to do anything.
No, exactly. Yeah, so we went to the police and they asked me about what had happened, asked who was involved. And they actually asked me to draw a picture of the room that it happened in.
Could you remember it? I mean, given being that drunk, what could you remember? I think it's really telling too that the way you talked about the drinking, I mean, only a teenager who's never drunk before would drink that way anyway, because not even thinking about, I got to go home and face my parents. Like, I remember the first time I got drunk was 13, and you think, how dumb was it? Because you just forget that at some point you've actually got to face your mum.
Yeah.
At some point I have to go home. Like, and I had a couple of mouthfuls of straight vodka, and because I'd never drunk before in my life, I had no idea that that would make me really, really drunk.
Yeah, exactly.
And I had to still go home, be home by 11.
Oh, yeah, no.
And I'm drinking this at about 7 or 8, and I was absolutely off my face when I got home. And so similarly, this is the afternoon or the daytime, and you're doing red wine laybacks, and it's like, you still have to go home, mate, and see your mum.
Yeah, I had no idea what I was in for with that. I was just Yep, seems like a good idea. I mean, people were drinking at that age at my school, and I think I was actually felt a bit behind from not having gone to this co-ed school. I mean, the year before at this Catholic school, it was a very different setup. And then I've gone to this school and people are like, yeah, we had a couple of UDLs on the weekend. And I was like, what? What do you mean? And I wanted to fit in that way as well. Like, I wanted to try it all.
How much could you remember? I'm just thinking about how hard that interview is with the police, because it's like, I was really drunk.
Well, the good thing was is that having been to that house previously, and I could remember how to get into the house, and I remembered Jake's bedroom, and I do remember the walk to his parents' bedroom, and I do remember waking up and where I was and the layout of the bed. I also remember the direction in which I crawled to the ensuite, and I remember that there was a TV on in the corner of the bedroom playing some sort of sport. I even remember the position in which I was laying on the bed with my ex-boyfriend. It was across the bed, so underneath the pillows. It's funny how you can remember those little things.
Yeah.
And that ultimately assisted them. I mean, obviously they believed what had happened, but when they went and saw all three of these boys and their parents.
God, Jake's parents finding out this happened in their bedroom.
Yeah. And I don't know what happened there, but I do know that the boys backed off a little bit. I mean, my ex-boyfriend no longer had any interest in me anyway, so he was, I think, trying to defend himself in the conversations that were happening, saying that it was both of us. We both, like, it, you know, she's basically just a slut. I mean, I'd obviously hurt him a few months earlier. He got what he wanted and he was done. He actually had a new girlfriend at this time. And so the boy from the other school, I don't remember hearing from him around this time, but the other boy who went to my school, he was done. We didn't speak. We didn't speak, obviously, after it happened anyway, but I mean, they definitely took less of an interest in any of it. So
they weren't charged?
They weren't charged. The police said that if they were a year older, they'd be charged. Like, I could press charges, but because of their age, they couldn't do it. So I'm not sure why that was, but yeah, and look, honestly, I think it would have made things really tricky for me at that point. I think I wanted them to know that the police knew about it, but I didn't want them to be in so much trouble that it would make things so intense for everybody.
Also, politically at school, I have two 14-year-olds, and I know I'm being reminded daily of how intense the social scene is. And so do you think it helped your cause that you took that very serious step when you were coming from a place where it was he said, she said, but he said times three and at least two cool guys versus you, the new girl? When it got around that she went to the cops and the cops visited them, that level of seriousness, did that impact on the conversation at school, the narrative at all in your favour?
Got worse.
Oh, you're joking.
And it wasn't them, it was girls.
Right. Wow.
It was, I don't know how, but I mean, they obviously told people that the police had visited them, and it was the girls. They were relentless. They were like, how could you do that to them? They were in so much trouble. Poor so-and-so. And that's the thing, like, it's hard because from what I remember, it was just the ex-boyfriend. I think the other two were just bystanders, but they were definitely in and out of the room a lot. And I remember, like, conversations at school, for instance. I remember, and so and there were a few boys as well that were particularly critical. And I remember one boy said to me, oh, apparently you were doing one thing to Jake while your ex-boyfriend was doing another thing to you. And I think it got to a point where I would just laugh about it because it took so much more energy to defend myself.
Well, what are you supposed to say in that situation? I mean,
oh, yeah, you can't,
I can't imagine.
No, and I didn't know, I didn't have the words for it back then.
Who does?
It was awful, yeah. But it ended up making things worse at school, and then I just went completely off the tracks. I couldn't be at school. There was actually one girl in particular who was dating my ex-boyfriend after all of it. And so she was one of the most popular girls in my year. So I could not fit in. It was just not going to happen. And I just remember everything started to change about me. I mean, I have this long blonde hair. I wanted to change that. I needed my hair to change. I remember I held myself differently. I spoke differently. I wagged something like 30 days of school afterwards just so I didn't have to be there.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how you ever went.
No.
I think the bravery it took for you to go and face that ever is extraordinary.
And that's the thing, right? Like there are a lot of cases where an assault like this happens and you have to face that person all the time. And then there's cases where you don't have to. But in my instance, I had to catch the bus with them every day. And I was in this little enclosed tube, which was just like a little rumor mill. And I felt like my senses were heightened that trip twice a day, every day.
And surrounded by girls defending your rapists is unfathomable to me.
Yes. And one of them ended up with a new girlfriend, and she was a really nasty girl, and she ended up egging my house multiple times. I remember one night we heard a car pull up at the front and we heard something going on in the driveway. So my mum and I have gone out the front and they've left manure all over my driveway. And I was so angry. I remember I kicked a bin over. I was just so angry. But my parents, they didn't know what to do with me. I wouldn't open up to them about how I was feeling. They tried to take me to a counsellor. I would just sit there saying, I've got nothing to say, got nothing to say. I would get on that bus and I would go through that hour of hell, and then I would walk down to the city from my school with another girl who was sort of a little bit, not experiencing that, but she had her own issues, and she, I guess we were getting up to trouble together. We'd go down there and we'd steal and we'd smoke and we'd, you know, drink if we could find it. Yeah, I was the kind of girl I'd shake my head at these days if I saw them at the shopping centre.
It's a really interesting point as well about, yeah, young people we see sometimes and we can be disapproving of, and it's a really good point about, you know, taking the time to think about why they might be behaving the way they're behaving. And also what you're describing is, you know, typical of young people who are victims of sexual assault. And we tend to think of them as being victimized by adults, but in your case, you were victimized by other children. But as a consequence of that, you're missing out on your education and you're developing bad habits and, you know, wandering the streets and all that kind of stuff and moving into lifestyle habits that are impacting on your adulthood, or beginning to, could have led you into a really problematic adulthood. The teenagehood that you're talking about is really heartbreaking because of your sexual assault by other children, which is what we're talking about here.
And it's not spoken about. It's not.
No, it's not.
You don't hear about when children attack children, and that's it. It's not like I was the only one, and that is, I'm so sure it's still going on today. I had a conversation with a 16-year-old the other day, and she is close to our family, and I asked her if it's happened to anyone at her school. I said, what? And I told her about what happened to me, and I said, would you believe me? She said, yeah, I'd have no reason not to believe you. And it was just interesting because I think, I don't know what it's like at school these days, but this was 17 years ago now, and I just felt like nobody did.
It's tough. It's still very tough.
Yeah.
And I think what you're saying, when I add that to the natural lack of compassion of kids, it's brutal.
It was so brutal. I ended up, I remember, so this happened in the April. It got to the July and I was just not okay. And there was one night that I just didn't come home. I left. I had been at school, and then after school I'd gone with this friend who I was up to all sorts of no good with, and we'd met up with some boys from another school close by who were in grade 10, so we were still in grade 8, and I ended up going back home with one of them, and I lost my virginity. And this was, I just turned 14, I think, and he had a bit of a rough upbringing as well. His family didn't really care who he brought home. It wasn't that type of thing, and I ended up staying there for 36 hours. My parents couldn't find out where I was. They were calling all my friends. They eventually, I think someone from my school who I was sort of friends with at the time, I had been speaking with, and she, my parents got onto her and she eventually told them. And so I think it was the Sunday morning. So this is the Friday night. The Sunday morning came around. They've come to the house that I was at. I still hadn't been home. They came around and they had a bag packed for me and they sent me off to my grandmother's for 4 weeks. And this was my dad's mum, my biological dad's mum. My parents ended up coming back to get me after 4 weeks, realizing that no one was trying to send me to school. And I think by that point, I had had enough. I think I knew that I was getting really upset. I didn't want to be, I was feeling really gross about the things that I was doing. My mum and I were having huge fights. And I think I'd had enough of that. I definitely didn't, I wasn't recovered. I wasn't recovered for a very long time, but I didn't want to be like that anymore. And I ended up going back to school. And I was just sort of not part of the conversation anymore. It was old news. I'm sure something else was going on there that people could talk about. I definitely hadn't redeemed myself by any means, but yeah, I was definitely old news. So it was easier.
So you disengaged.
Yeah. I just removed myself from the situation and did whatever I could to not think about it.
That's amazing. So you're saying that you went back to the same school and you just made a decision to not be part of the conversation, as Taylor Swift would say. You were just like, I do not wish to be part of this and I'm disengaging. You go about your business and I'm just not paying any attention to it.
Yeah, I think because it was all I thought about. When people would bring it up with me, it was just so easy to shut down because I wanted to talk about something else at that point. When you're thinking about it constantly, it's just like, change the subject.
Wow. It's such an incredible realization that most of us have very much later in life.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you don't give it oxygen, as we say, or all of these expressions that we have now, if you don't let it be something, and it's not anything, it's all of those things. If you don't give it attention, if you don't give bullies what they want, all of those things. But most kids, I suppose you'd been through so much, you grew through it somehow.
Yeah. I had. And so that was, I guess, the end of the heightened part of all of that. So it was really extreme behavior and it could have got me seriously hurt or, I mean, you know, staying at random houses at such a young age. So that was done. I was back home. I went back to school.
I don't need to tell you what a lot of kids do, you know, the kinds of ways that a lot of young people harm themselves in situations like this, you know.
Yeah, and I did go on to try to do that stuff the following year. So that was, I guess that was the end of the initial aftermath, and then it was more coming back, recovering from that, just ignoring the comments at school, getting on with what I was doing. I actually went up to Queensland. My dad got out of jail.
It's all still happening, by the way.
Yep. Headed back home after that. And then it was school holidays. And then to start of grade 9, those year 10 boys were gone. They weren't coming back to school. I didn't have a fresh start the next year, but I didn't have to worry about getting on the bus and being around that. So the next year, I still hadn't, I think people still saw me as that kind of girl. Like it wasn't, I definitely wasn't who I was that year before when I'd first started there. I felt like I'd tarnished that completely. I think I was disgusted with myself, to be honest. I didn't like myself for a very long time. I had a few other things that were going on internally as a result the following year, I think. So you'd have another bullying instance and then that would all sort of bring up those feelings again.
I mean, your self-esteem must have been so low. I guess a minute ago I was just celebrating like, oh my God, you were Taylor Swift. But now I'm thinking, oh, hang on, are you saying that you just like accepted it? Like, it sounds like your self-esteem was just low and you just kind of...
Yeah, it was. I just needed that part to be over. But that stuff always, it continued coming back up for me. And a huge part of that, I should say, was because getting back to those boys, two of them never spoke to me again. One of them did. The one who went to the other school. So I ended up having an on and off again relationship with him throughout year 9. I mean, whatever you can call a year 9 relationship. But I mean, we would... talk constantly. We'd meet up. We would do couplish things, but then he would go and talk negatively about me to people. He would always keep me close, but he would never have a relationship with me because I think he saw me in a light that wasn't a great light after what had happened. But I always found that I was seeking his approval. He was a connection to that group and I needed him to want me. I wanted him to want me. I wanted to feel some sort of validation.
And try and turn that experience around somehow.
Exactly. And him being there was so harmful because he would give me that and then he'd take it right back away. He'd go and get a proper girlfriend. He'd say awful things about me. More rumors would circulate from other girls. I remember in grade 9, I ended up sending him a nude. And that got circulated pretty quickly. And it was just, it all comes back to this one incident, right? Like, there's no reason for me to ever do that stuff with him. There's no reason for me to constantly put myself in that position with him. But I was seeking something from him that I had lost. And he was a direct connection to all of that. And I wanted him to want me. And he said, send me a photo. And I did. And it was so stupid. And I remember that going around and it brought back everything for me in grade 9. And I actually overdosed. I tried to seriously hurt myself. I took, I think it was 13 or 14 period pain pills. They weren't sort of like a painkiller type thing. They were something else that I had been taking, but I didn't know what the effect was going to have on my body. Thankfully, it didn't do all that much except make me a little bit sick. But I was ready to just take myself back to the point that I'd been in the year prior because it was just starting up again. A photo was going around and, yeah, so that was grade 9. So we had this stuff going on, but I was at school. He didn't go to my school, so that made school a bit easier. So my schooling was back to sort of normal, but then I'd have like a few grades drop when these things would happen and whatnot. But ultimately, I ended up ending it completely with him in year 10 when I met my first love. He came to the school in late grade 9 and instantly I was like, oh, he's hot. I like him. But the next year we started talking and we ended up becoming, we had a relationship and that went on from March 2009, so just before I turned 16, up until I was almost 19. So, and that was incredibly healing for me because, like, he thought the world of me and he wasn't at our school when all that happened. So he didn't have this tarnished view of me. He just saw me for who I was. So that was really, really healing for me at that time. Going into my adult years. But then, and then I met my husband and he is so good. He is so amazing. Like literally the best outcome you could hope for in a situation like this. Like I don't know how I found him. And that's the thing, like I'd never heard of him. It's a small place where we live. He'd never heard of me. And I do wonder sometimes if he had been a part of all of that, would things be different? But I know his personality. I don't think so. But yeah, so that's, I guess, where I am now.
Have you ever had counselling for all of that?
I went through some things after having my son and that brought it all back up for me.
Having children often does, I find.
Yeah.
It brings up a lot of childhood trauma.
I think so. And I did go and see a good psychologist. We only had a few sessions, but it was really validating for me to hear her say the word rape because for a long time, while I knew it wasn't okay and I knew it was a sexual assault, a part of me kept going back to, did I do something wrong? Was it me? And hearing her say that was really validating for me. I think this call as well is quite therapeutic for me, talking about it. And especially now that I have a daughter, I've sat down recently with my husband and we've spoken about it. And like he had tears in his eyes. I think it's so good knowing that she had that role model in her life and that she's never going to be like that. And I think I've done a really good job at making sure that my daughter has that security around her And we'll do everything that we can to make sure she never gets herself in a position like this.
And also your son. I mean, I think a lot about the parents of these boys who all received a visit from the police telling them these stories. And I'm shocked and appalled that none of them reached out to you because, you know, if I'd like to think that if I received a visit like that, I'd be devastated. And I'd at least, as much as I'm sure my son would say, no, Mum, no, no. And I can't even put my real son in this in my mind. But
no.
Nobody wants to. But heaven forbid if we have to, as parents of boys, because these are not aliens. I always say this, these boys that you're talking about are not aliens. They're not monsters who crawled out of the sewer system. These are were boys and they are now men who live among us. They're our neighbours. These are men who commit sexual assaults, rapes, men we work with, men we say hi to down the street. They're men we know and like in a lot of ways. They're the boys that the other girls at your school liked and defended. But their parents had to believe it. Their parents had to say, okay, we need to have serious conversations about this and we need to talk about consent and make sure our sons understood what happened that day, why drinking like that and then having any sexual contact with a woman is inappropriate, it's wrong, she couldn't have given consent. You know, these are all the conversations we need to have with our sons.
Exactly, and it's for that, and it's also for the fact that I look back at my childhood and I see a few things. I see like a family holiday, or I see the friendships that I had, and then I see this, and it is such a core memory for me. These boys have gone on, and I know at least one of them has a family now, but they don't understand that they might look back at that and think, oh yeah, shut down that memory. I've lived with that memory and thought about it every day, if not every second day, up until now, and I will think about it moving forward. I mean, I definitely don't see myself as the person at fault in that situation anymore, but I live with that every single day because of something that they did.
Everything that happened is disgraceful. Kicking you out of the house, flicking a condom wrapper at you, laughing at you, all of that is so disgraceful. It's disgraceful human behaviour. I mean, and they are someone's son, and that means that someone raised them really poorly. And people need to take responsibility for the way they're raising their sons. We all have to, you know?
Exactly. And how do you build your self-worth back up after that when you have so many people bringing you down? And yeah. It took a long time for me to get back there. I mean, even as an adult, there were definitely situations that I got into that I think probably weren't consensual, but I moved past it. I was so used to dealing with situations like that. And they just genuinely, as bad as it sounds, it didn't faze me as much as they should have. I mean, they weren't extreme situations.
And a lot of us end up saying yes because we're scared to say no. We're scared of how that will make someone angry and how it will escalate beyond that. We say yes because it's faster.
I wanted acceptance as well.
Yeah, we say yes to make people like us. Yeah. We say yes for lots of reasons other than we actually want to do something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
I'm so glad that you're a happy human being and that you're living a happy life and with a beautiful family and a beautiful partner.
Yeah.
And living a boring life like your mum.
I can't be silent about stuff like this because I do have a daughter now. And I would hope that if something like this was recorded and put out into the world, even if it doesn't have my name connected to it, I can show her when she's 20 and say, this happened to me, but we got you. We got you here. We kept you safe. You know, I made a real big change in my life and I'm so happy. I'm so happy we got to this point because while I made these little decisions along the way and I was definitely healed in some ways, having my kids was definitely the biggest healing point for me, especially my first. So my second, definitely all the feels, but my first, it was like, I will never do a bad thing again. I will never not look after myself. I will carry this child through on a golden pillow and make sure he is safe for the rest of his life. And yeah. With my daughter, it is exactly the same. But then I look at her and I just think of myself. I think of how what my dad used to do to my mum when I was only a year or two older than her in front of me. I think about the fact that he had the porn around. I think about all of that. And I'm like, girl, you're going to be so guarded. It's not even funny.
Thank you to our guest today, Emma.
If you need support after listening to this podcast, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or contact 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737 732 or 1-800-RESPECT.org.au. Indigenous Australians can contact 13 Yarn on 13 92 76 or 13yarn.org.au. Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. We'll be back next week.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.